check out Rush Collectibles' awesome horror figures, including the first and only Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey 2 figures. For more information, go to rushfigures.com.
Remember, in the course of discussing movies, the host will spoil plots. You've been warned. Listen to their screams.
Greetings, ghouls and creeps, and welcome to Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. I am one of your friends, David, joined as always by your other friend, Ike. Ike, how are you?
Hey, not doing too bad. Living the dream.
All right. This is your dream?
I guess so. It might be a nightmare, who knows?
Well, that's kind of the name of the game here, right? We're talking horror, so it's kind of nightmares are the thing. So before we get going on this episode, we'd like to send a special thank you to our wives, our listeners, and our followers for all your support and everything you do. So, Ike, before we dive into everything, did you watch anything this week?
I sure did. Nothing too crazy this week, just a couple of odds and ends. But we talked about it last week, but I, for some reason, had a want to watch House of Wax. So, went out there and watched that. Let's see. I watched a new show on Prime. I watched the first season. There's two seasons of it. It's called Them. It's pretty good. You know, the Prime app has slowly been evolving over the years, so it was usable this time. but the show's called Them. It's sort of like a paranormal thriller type deal, but it was pretty good. I honestly have no idea how to describe it, but it takes place like in America in the 50s, so at the height of segregation, and it talks about a black family who moves into a previously white neighborhood, so you can imagine the issues that might arise with that, in the 50s specifically. So I watched that, it was pretty good, and then I also finished Chucky season 3, so,
Yeah, very good.
The last part of it.
It's pretty good. It was good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah. It definitely left it on a cliffhanger, so I really hope they end up making another season. I know there's been some question as to whether or not they will or not.
Yeah, let's hope so. I think it gets them a lot of attention. I wouldn't know why they wouldn't want to, but I don't know. But here's hoping.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Well, besides the new episode of Chucky that finished out the season, I didn't watch anything. We are recording a little earlier in the week than usual. Actually, quite a bit earlier because I've done some traveling. I am right now sitting in Indiana, joy of joys, and recording this from my hotel room. So here we are. This is where we stand. So if come Thursday when this is released and there's some big news story that happened that we didn't talk about, well, that's why, because we're recording this several days earlier.
True.
And
Cinco de Mayo.
Whatever news story that you're going to yell at us about, it hasn't happened at this stage. So, all right. So with that said, then, let's go into our weekly segment.
Generation Gap.
And this week we're doing the newest, the youngest of the weekly segments. This is Generation Gap. This is where we use Ike's birth year of 1995 as a kind of a dividing line. I pick a movie that is pre-1995, or Ike picks one that is post-1995, and the other person then picks a picture that we feel is a comparable watch from the other era. And Ike, this week I have chosen for you Sleepaway Camp from 1983. So do you have what you feel is a comparable watch post-1995?
I do, absolutely.
All right, go ahead then.
Yeah, I honestly was pretty confident about this one because when you told me, because obviously for everyone who wants a little peek behind the curtain here, anytime that these types of things go up, generally the day of, Dave will send over, you know, the movie, so that way I have a little bit of time to think about it, but not like a lot of time. Just because with me, I'll think about it for like days and I'll just like overthink it. So I get the perfect amount of time to think about this one. But this one, I had an immediate idea. I was like, oh, okay, this is perfect. And it's a movie that you and I have actually reviewed.
Oh, so, okay.
I picked They Them, which is the camp slasher with Kevin Bacon from 2022.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So, obviously, for people who are unfamiliar, just a real quick synopsis from IMDb. A group of teenagers at an LGBTQ plus conversion camp endures unsettling psychological techniques while being stalked by a mysterious masked killer. Now, obviously, it's not the exact same as Sleepaway Camp, but it has some of the same themes. You know, it's a camp, there's a killer, and it has some potential undertones of, you know, gender fluidity or identity. And I think it matches pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, it's a pretty good pick. But I very much enjoyed both those films. And I think they're both good. Sleepaway Camp is one of my all-time classic favorites. And They Them is not that high, but it was still a fun film. I do enjoy Kevin Bacon, so.
Yeah. I was going to say too is that there's most of these movies we talk about, we're not going to find anything that's better than the original, except for on a handful of occasions maybe. I know like last time it was Chucky, and then mine was, you know, Annabelle. So, you know, there's obviously some difference there, but for this one specifically, I absolutely agree. Like, Sleepaway Camp is much better than They Them. Not to say They Them is bad, but Sleepaway Camp is iconic.
Yeah. Well, you never say never, because eventually we may. Because, sure. You know, I'm not always going to pick some of my top favorite movies. It's just so far that's what it's done. At some point, I'll dig a little deeper and go for something that's not necessarily a widely accepted classic. So that way it's a little. But so far, since we're still filling our way with this new segment, or I'm trying to keep the softball lobs in there to make sure the groove's going. And so far, it's going pretty good. So maybe next time we'll up the ante, or either that, or we'll reverse the roles and let you pick the movie, and then I'll counter. So, well, maybe next time we'll try something, because I think it's going pretty well. I think the segment's a keeper. I enjoy it. So,
I do as well.
All right. Well, very, very good. So there you have it. So go watch both those movies if you haven't already, and even if you have, just go watch them again. But we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have news, birthdays, and movie anniversaries. So stick around.
Make sure you subscribe to listen to Their Screams on your favorite podcast platform. Also, make sure you look us up on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, TikTok, and Slasher. All you have to do is look up Listen to Screams, that is Listen, the number 2 in Screams, and you can find us there. Also, make sure you go and buy yourself a Listen to Their Screams t-shirt. You can find all of our shirts at tinyurl.com/screamsshirts.
Spread the news. And welcome back with the news. All right. Starting us off here, beginning on May 10th at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Rush Collectibles will have Winnie and Tigger minifigures from the Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey 2 available for pre-order. So you can go to rushfigures.com to pre-order those as soon as possible. Obviously, they don't have an infinite supply, so they will eventually run out. So make sure you get yours.
Yep. This is not the larger figures that we've shared. These are the small figures. Just they're not even posable or anything. They're only a couple inches, 2-3 inches tall. For any wrestling fans out there, these are like the micro buddies, micro wrestlers that you see in all the, you know, monthly crate boxes and stuff that everybody's doing now. There's, you know, all kinds of companies do them. But they're just small, about 3 inches tall. They're not posable. They're just kind of, you know, they're pretty cool. They're cool looking, but they're just for display. But more importantly, this is the first merchandise we're getting from this movie. So I'm super, super stoked.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And then Mike Flanagan is in talks to direct Blumhouse's next Exorcist movie. So this is interesting because we had, I believe it was David Gordon Green who did the last one. Mm-hmm. And there was plans to make a potential trilogy. And so the way this is worded, I'm going to either assume that Mike Flanagan will be stepping in and directing the next film in this trilogy, or potentially making his own creation. I'm not sure if that's public knowledge or not, but of course, Mike Flanagan is fantastic. You know, Mike Flanagan's done a lot, and I feel pretty confident that he should be able to helm that project with no issues. And, you know, I also feel like maybe David Gordon Green gets a hard time because, you know, people don't like his Halloween movies. So maybe getting a fresh name in there, someone that's a little, I don't even want to say more like not, what's the word I'm looking for? Not stigmatized, maybe. I don't know. But I think it could be promising.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is just the next movie. I don't know if they're completely 100% sold on it being a trilogy now. I think that's still the hopes. But I think that they were, Blumhouse and Universal were, underwhelmed by the last one. What was it? Exorcist Believer? Is that what it was? Believer? And, so they're hoping, you know, they still would like to continue, but they're hoping to bring someone in with, you know, a fresh approach, someone to maybe write it. I don't know. I enjoyed Exorcist Believer. And, you know, so I don't know. You might be right. You know, Green might just, everybody may have a predisposition to him right now that they're just, and, you know, some people may be like, oh, he's there. I don't want to watch that. And, didn't give it a fair shake. But, I don't know. I don't think it's fair because I don't think the movie was that bad. I mean, I thought it was all right, but you can go back in the archives and listen to our review of Exorcist Believer to see what we actually said about it at the time, but I believe we overall were, you know, fairly satisfied with it.
But, yep, generally positive from what I recall.
Yeah. And no offense to Green, but you know, I'll be honest. Yeah. I would probably rather have Mike Flanagan at the helm just because I really tend to enjoy Mike Flanagan's films better. I don't have a sour taste on, you know, David Howard Green or whatever his name is. I don't know. But what's his name? It's not David Howard Green, is it?
It's David Gordon Green, I believe.
David Gordon Green. David Howard Thornton plays Arthur Clown. I'm getting my Davids confused. But I don't have any, you know, sour taste in my mouth about Green per se, based on past work or anything else. I tend to be a fan of Mike Flanagan's stuff. So I'm pretty excited to see him get a chance at an Exorcist movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Go Mike Flanagan. But all right.
Go Mike.
So Ghostbusters Frozen Empire is now available to buy or rent on video on demand. We never got a chance to review this. Obviously, Ghostbusters, you know, kind of bridges the gap between, like, you know, family friendly comedy to, I guess, somewhat scary. But I got a chance to check this in theaters and I enjoyed it. So if you haven't watched it yet, check it out on video on demand. Wouldn't hurt to give it a look.
Yep. I do enjoy the Ghostbusters franchise.
Oh yeah, can't beat a little Ghostbuster. Who are you gonna call? Ghostbusters. All right. Pope's Exorcist producer Jeff Katz announced that a sequel to the film is officially happening. We're getting our Avengers Assemble moment here for the Pope's Exorcist.
Right.
obviously, I think if I recall correctly, we had generally positive reviews for this as well. If you want our full review, we have the Pope's Exorcist reviews in our archives, of course. But yeah, Pope's Exorcist 2, Electric Boogaloo, should be really fun. Uh-huh. I hope they give it that title.
Oh, to see Russell Crowe as, you know, as a priest breakdancing, I would be all in on that. But yeah, I mean, I generally enjoyed the first one. Again, this almost superhero-y ending of it, and I don't know, that was a little, but I don't know. We'll see what happens with that. Maybe it won't translate as hokey into the next film as what it seemed to then. I don't know, but we'll see. I'll still give it a watch, and I'm glad we're getting another one, so we can see what happens.
Absolutely, can't beat it. All right. And then our last little bit of news, and we kind of already talked about this.
Yeah, a little bit.
I forgot that this was in the news, so I didn't mean to bring it
That's
up at right. first, but,
That's okay.
Chucky season 3, of course, has concluded, and the series has not yet been renewed for a fourth season. Fans are taking to social media in support of the show by using hashtag Renew Chucky, So if you'd like to take part in that trend, I'm sure both of us will and have. And, you know, give it a shot. Give it a tweet. You know, I'm a firm believer that in this day and age of information technology that, you know, social media is one of the largest tools that us as consumers and us as people who love these, you know, characters, that's the best way for us to get our voices heard. Mob Rule tends to work pretty well on social media.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if it goes well enough and the network or whatever looks and says, oh, why, what's this Chucky thing trending? And who knows, you know, I mean, it'll get some eyes on it. There's, I don't really know. Maybe I should have looked a little deeper. There is some phone number out there for the series that they're plugging that you call. I don't know what it is when you call, what happens. But it's some kind of, you know, marketing thing from the Chucky side. Again, probably just to show the, that, you know, fans are wanting this and to show that kind of support thing. So, if you really, really want to support, you know, someone can look that up and see what that is. And it's something official from the series. But again, I just noticed it. Don't know exactly what it is or what it does. So.
Well, I guess for
do what you want with that.
First time ever.
Calling Chucky and pledging your support. Now, hang up and text me. What kind of a dickwad calls people anymore? Text Chuck with me to this number and get a surprise.
There you go. That's what happens when you call the number. So I think if you text it, you get something back. I don't know.
Are you going to text it? What, you text Chuck with me to the number? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it says Chuck with me to the number. And
I'm digging the play on words, Chuck with me.
Right. It sends you a link to join a Chucky community where you'll get regular text updates from your friend till the end. So that's pretty cool. But if anybody's curious, the phone number is 1-201-500-3347.
There you go. Again, I think it's, you know, yeah, it's a marketing thing, clearly, right? Yeah. They're trying to show, get some fan response, some fan feedback, and show something that they can take and say, hey, look at this. This is, you know, the fans want it. So, yeah, there you go. If you enjoyed the series or enjoying the series, go out there and support it. I very much hope we get a fourth, because so far, I really, really enjoyed it. I liked the way the third season, you know, kind of ended, because I was curious what they were going to pull off. I mean, and they just continue to bring, returning people back into it left and right and different things. So it's very clever and creative to me. It's very enjoyable. And again, it's what we've been preaching for so long, that these horror franchises can fully utilize the series format in a really, really creative and clever way. And, I mean, Child's Play has just nailed it. It's totally revitalized that franchise.
Absolutely. And I'm sorry, I texted the number and it's fantastic. It literally, you say Chuck with me and it responds, hey, dipshits, it's really Chucky, your friend till the end. Want to play? Of course you do. You better be watching my killer TV show. And then you can click a link and sign up for like texts. Basically just like you can save the person the number and then it just texts you with, you know, updates about the show and stuff. So I did it. It's pretty cool. So, hey, like he said, you know, make sure you're doing this. Social media, everything else. Let's keep, you know, giving them some support, watching their stuff. And, hey, maybe we'll help make Chucky Season 4 a reality.
Yeah. I like how these franchises do this kind of stuff. What was it? It was something with Scream, right? Where you...
Yeah, there was a phone number.
Remember you...
I thought. Or an app, maybe?
Yeah, there was something you got a call from Ghostface or something, or it was something weird. I can't remember. There was something you did. I can't remember exactly. But I mean, I like when they do this kind of marketing stuff and stay relevant and fresh and active and everything else. That's good. Keep at it.
Absolutely. Sorry. You can also it gives you a thing where you create a contact and it's literally Chucky's picture. So I have him on my phone now. So.
That's fantastic.
I love that. I'm like wake up in the middle of the night to a text from him. It's gonna scare the shit out of me for sure.
That's right. That's what they need to do. Make sure like all the texts come out these odd hours.
Right, like 2-3 o'clock in the morning or something. Lauren. Anywho, well, that was fun. That's a fun little adventure that we all went on together.
There you go.
But all right. Moving on, next up, we have only one birthday today, which is surprising. and it is Lar Park Lincoln, born May 12th, 1961. You may know her from Friday the 13th, 7, The New Blood. She plays Tina in New Blood, right?
Sure. Yep.
There you go. There you go. Tina in The New Blood. That's she's like got the brain thing, right? Where she's like psychic or whatever.
Yep.
There you go. See, I know my people.
Roxette Doc.
That's right. That's right. And then her ghost dad comes up and swallows Jason back into the lake.
Yep. Good times.
That's a real thing, guys. I promise. I'm not making that up. That actually happened. Anywho.
I mean, it's the 7th Friday the 13th, man. They had to swing big.
They certainly did. They certainly did. All right. Moving on to some movie anniversaries. We have May 9th, 1973, Soylent Green. So I've heard of Soylent Green. I know it's kind of like a horror movie about like the future. But I've never seen the movie, so I think Dave, you're gonna have
to. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Yeah, it's where there's a food shortage, and they realize, hey, you know what we have plenty of? Humans. So they start supplementing the food supply with some human based product.
Wow. Huh. See, it's weird. There's actually a real life. It's a meal supplement called Soylent. It's a drink.
Yeah, it's. I'm sure. I guarantee it's a play on this.
It must be, because, like, I mean, how would you not make it and be like, oh, yeah, let me not Google Soylent. But, yeah. But, yeah, it has banana flavor. I want to try that. But that's a whole nother thing. I love banana flavor, by the way. Fun fact.
That's how you, I guess, banana flavor to mask the fleshy flavor.
Right, to mask the flavor of human. See, this is how they get you, right? They have this movie in the 70s, and then they make the product, like, as a joke, but, like, they're actually putting humans in it because they make you think they're not, right? It's a conspiracy. Right.
There was total play on this in one of the one segment from one of the Simpsons Treehouse of Horrors, remember? Where they were serving it in the school cafeteria.
That's right. I remember that. It's all a conspiracy, man. All right. Before I get sued.
Big brother gonna get you, man.
That's right. Gonna get you, sucker.
Oh, that's another movie.
I love that one.
Hilarious movie. Hilarious movie. Doesn't fit this podcast, but oh my gosh, such a fun movie.
That's the one. It's like Chris Rock. Can I get one review?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
How much is one review?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a Wayne's Brothers movie. It's so funny. So funny. I'm gonna get you, sucker. Love that movie.
Not horror, but check it out, guys.
Right.
But, all right. Moving on. We actually have two of these that were made only 8 years apart. So, May 9th, 1980, Friday the 13th, the OG. Now, mm-hmm. I'm very outspoken on my, I don't even necessarily want to say dislike of this movie, but maybe my preference to other movies, later movies in the franchise. But it's a good movie. Yeah. It's there for a reason.
Yeah, you've voiced that opinion many times.
And I will continue to do so.
I see so.
Obviously, Dave loves this. I love this to an extent. I'm pretty sure we've not yet ranked these, have we?
No, we have not. But
I think we talked about waiting.
We're waiting.
Show, right?
I think we're waiting for Crystal Lake. Whenever that
comes.
Hadn't heard anything about that in a while. Well, I don't know what's going on there. Here, everybody was thinking, oh, 2024, we'll get something 2024. And I'm like, okay, here we are. It's May, and there's been nothing official come out. But supposedly they have, I mean, they filmed some stuff. It's what they've said, you know, some of the, I don't know. Something's got to be happening. I like that they're keeping it very hush-hush, but come on, man, give us a poster or a picture or something. Trailer, teaser,
right? Something to make sure it's alive, you know.
Give us something. So yeah, we will rank the Friday movies. Not the Friday movies. The Friday the 13th movies.
Friday after next.
Yeah, again, the Friday just doesn't really fit the bill here. Again, funny movies, but just doesn't really apply here.
Love that. All right, so
only 8 years later, 8 years and 4 days, Friday 13th, Part 7, The New Blood, May 13th, 1988. So we just had a birthday.
So they pretty much turned out almost 1 year there then.
Yeah, pretty much.
They were like, we made some money, let's get rolling. And they were just cooking those suckers. If, you know, we're talking 8 years later and they were on the seventh one. So they.
That's some turnaround. That's some shit that, like, not even Halloween did that shit. I mean, don't get me wrong, Halloween made a shit ton of movies, but, like, I feel like there was at least, like, a few of them that had, like, 2 to 3 year gaps between them.
That was the 80s. They were.
That certainly was, wasn't it? Oh, Lord. Here's another good... This one's actually a good one. I like this movie from the 80s. I recently watched it, at Dave's request. May 13th, 1988, the same day, Maniac Cop.
Good movie. Love it.
Oh, yeah, very good. I love Maniac Cop. Bruce Campbell's in this, of course. You can't beat a good Bruce Campbell movie. Lots of other people in this, too, but, I mean, come on. Bruce Campbell's the most important. Hail to the king, baby. Love it. All right. Moving on. This one I don't think I have seen, or if I have, it's been a while. May 15th, 1981. Happy birthday to me. It's a slasher movie, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very creepy ass movie. And what's even creepier, it's got that Melissa Sue, whatever her name is, Anderson, I think is her name, who was in Little House on the Prairie. So it's even made. When you get that ironic person who you're used to playing one kind of role and you see her or something like this, it's totally creepy to me, but yeah, it's pretty, but I'm not 100%, but I'm pretty sure that was, it was remade at some point. I almost guarantee it.
Look, happy birthday.
Be very surprised if it's not been remade.
I don't show any remakes. Now there's a Happy Death Day, but I don't think that's,
That's weird. I'm surprised. But, fun movie. Good movie.
Well, hey, if anybody's out there looking for another movie to remake, Happy Birthday to Me is a good one. But, all right.
That seems peculiar to me.
I'll Google it while we're talking, but I'm at least according to IMDb, there's not. But that could very easily be wrong. IMDb is not the best search engine for those things. Look. Anywho. Before I get too off track, upcoming releases, just the one, but it's an important one because we're reviewing this one next episode. Mm-hmm. Life of Belle comes to Screambox on May 17th. The found footage film is described as in 2018, Annabelle Starnes went missing. York County Police released surveillance footage of the home in hopes of new leads. And as I mentioned, next episode, you'll hear us talk about this. So. Yeah.
Pretty cool. We actually have a screener link for this, so the next episode, this will be dropping our review of it, but it will be dropping a day before its release, so it will be pretty much spoiler-free, but you will hear what we think of it, and I'm super excited, because, you know, found footage is fun, and this ought to be pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely, and I always like getting the screener links. I always feel very important when I get those. Very important person. I feel like a VIP.
VIP.
That's right. VIP, very important person. But, anywho, check that out next week, guys. Mm-hmm. But, wow. I say not a whole lot of news and stuff this week. Kind of a slow news week. Plus, it's early in the week, so who knows? Something else might happen during the week. But this is a perfect time for me to impress the importance of make sure you follow us on social media. Because if anything does happen between today, which is the day of recording, which is Cinco de Mayo, May the 5th, May the 5th be with you, Revenge of the 5th, if anything happens between now and when we record next on Thursday, or not record next, but when the movie, God bless America, I can't speak, when it comes out on Thursday, or when we record next week, the week after, you can find
us. Just follow us on social media, man. Just follow us on social media.
Follow us, damn it. Follow us.
I don't know what I'm saying. Just follow us.
Am I even speaking English anymore, man?
What's
in the box? That's a different movie, guys. That's 7. Make sure you check that movie out, too. That one is a horror movie.
Amazing movie.
It's Brad Pitt, what's it called? Morgan Freeman. And some other people that I can't remember on the top of my head.
Oh, great movie.
Very much so. It's a good one. It's weird that one's like, it came out, what, in like 2001 or like 99 or something like that?
Probably, yeah. I don't know.
It's like 25.
Yep, Brad Pitt was pretty young, I think.
He was. Anywho. All right. That's it for right now. We're going to come back in just a moment. But when we do, we're going to have our official review of Tarot. Stick around.
This is Wrestling Nostalgia, the podcast that dives into wrestling history. Hey, wrestling fans, I'm Dave Dynasty. And if you enjoy podcasts that are knowledgeable and history-driven, then Wrestling Nostalgia is for you. With great guests and fun interviews, there are over 200 episodes in our archives. We chat with several first-time guests and often cover topics not discussed on other podcasts. Look up Wrestling Nostalgia on your favorite podcast platform and visit all of our links at linktree.com/WrasslePod. That is linktr.ee/RASSLEPOD. And remember, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and keep on growing.
All right, and welcome back to Listen to Their Screams. It is review time, and we are reviewing Tarot. The movie is based on the novel Horoscope by Nicholas Adams. As a matter of fact, during the whole production of the movie, I believe that's what they called it. It was just Horoscope, and then they eventually gave it the name Tarot. The movie was adapted by Spencer Cohen and Anna Halberg, who also directed the movie, starring all kinds of people, but some of the primaries were Harriet Slater, Dane Bradley, Jacob Batalion, and others. It debuted in theaters May 3rd, and the only numbers since we're recording early in the opening weekend's not even over. All we have is opening night. It grossed $2,545,000 domestically, which was good for number two on that night, Friday night, behind the Fall Guy. And, what's his name? Ryan Gosling?
Is he
the one? Yeah. You got Ryan Gosling, remaking a 70s series. It's, you're just battling for number two.
You really are.
Yeah, but anyway, so this movie's pretty fresh out there as far as we're recording this. And we both went and saw it. And, I enjoyed the movie. I've said this a few times about some movies. I don't particularly think I'm the key target for this kind of movie. I did get to enjoy it. Don't get me wrong. But I think this movie was more, it seemed like it was more aimed for high school, college age kids to me. Which is okay. It's fine. I don't have an issue with that. It was fun. It was okay. This movie very much felt like something kind of out of the late 90s, early 2000s to me. It felt like that kind of movie.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that necessarily in a bad way. I'm just saying that's to be stylistically whatever, it felt like. There were some good jump scares. There was some okay stuff. I don't really recall that there was anything to this that was real surprising per se, going through it. Everything was, I don't know, it was kind of predictable, where it was going, what was going to happen, even to the point of knowing who would probably survive and things like that. But I do enjoy the cast. I thought they did a really, really good job. Jacob Batalon, or however you say his name, the kid that's in Spider-Man, the Spider-Man, new Spider-Man movies. He just cracks me up. They're just something, especially in this one, where he's kind of like the stoner type guy. And he was just funnier in hell. Movie was fun. It was okay. It was not a bad watch. Thankfully it wasn't too long. But again, nothing here that really, really blew me away or really felt that fresh and original or whatever. It just kind of, again, it felt like to me one of those late 90s, early 2000 kind of horror movies that's out there, starring some of the, young hip actors that are out there in the cast. And it's, it is what it is. And, but again, like I said, nothing really blew me away with this movie. So, Ike, what'd you think?
Absolutely. I'm trying to get over the young hip actors.
yeah, well, I'm old. That's what I got. That's what I got for you.
That's what it got.
So it is. It's a very young cast of actors and actresses that are on the rise, right? That are starting to really find their footing in their careers. And, you know, if you look back, a lot of the people in those late 90s, early 2000 films and what they are now, I mean, that's some of them are just, it's remarkable, right? The careers they went on to have. And I think a lot of the people in this cast, I think it's the same thing. I think a lot of them are going to go on to have, do some really, really huge things. And, they're just really kind of starting to, they're young. They're starting their careers here. So.
Yeah.
Except absolutely. for the one lady that survived the London thing. She was the old person in the film.
Actually, before I start, that woman, her name's Olwen, I think, Fouer, mm-hmm, something like mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
She's in a lot of stuff. She was like she played Sally Hardesty in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, not the original.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, she's in a bunch of stuff. She's like, I don't know, like, I was looking at her IMDb and she has like 10 movies just within the year of 2023 alone. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah. Dude. Yeah. She kind of jumped at me when I saw her on the screen of, oh yeah, I didn't know exactly what I was thinking of it, but I'm like, oh, I've seen her stuff. But, yeah, when she popped up, when they went to her house or whatever in the movie and you first saw her, I was like, oh, I know that lady.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's what I said, so, too. I was like,
yep.
She's also in a trailer for The Watchers. And I was like, oh, hey, yeah. Anywho. So, Taro. I'm talking about other movies other than Taro. So, Taro. So, first and foremost, let's get some of the good stuff out. Because I do have a couple of, I have one major qualm with this movie. And we'll kind of talk about that in a minute. But the good stuff. Like you said, it was a very easy to watch, very simple plot, a little predictable, but like we always say, predictable is not horrible in a lot of cases. The movie did have a couple of legitimately like scary parts, mostly jump scares, but the tension was definitely palpable in a few of the scenes, especially the more important ones where they're trying to build that tension to sort of, you know, foray like, hey, this is what's going on here. So I definitely think that they did a decent job of creating the tension and creating the mystery and creating the fear. In addition to that, I would say that one of the biggest and probably my favorite thing about this movie is the tarot cards and the monsters themselves.
Yeah,
I thought the monsters looked great. I mean, that was probably my favorite part of the entire movie.
I did too.
I think my favorite. go ahead.
Go ahead. That's just where I was going. What was your favorite?
I'd say my favorite would either be, it's a tie between the magician and the death. Yeah.
Yeah. Mine was the magician. That the magician scene, that kill scene with the magician, that was terrifying.
It was.
That whole thing was so creepy with the audience and seeing out the lock hole. Oh, that whole scene was the most terrifying part of the movie was that, just because of the vantage point. It was so cool. I don't know. The crowd really sealed the deal because the crowd was just as creepy as he was. And, the magician, that whole scene with the magician was my favorite.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I 100% agree. But yeah, the monsters were great. It was just, I think that was definitely probably the most redeeming part of this. And the guy who plays the magician, by the way, his name is James Swanton and he was in stop motion. He played the Ash Man. If you recall him in that.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Huh.
And I don't recall him, but he was also in First Omen.
Was in what?
In First Omen.
Was he? Huh.
He, I don't he was that. Some monster. He says the jackal performer or something like that, he says. But I don't know.
So he does a lot of, he does a lot of the monster costume makeup type stuff, huh? He's big into that.
Yeah, he's kind of like a Javier Botet or the fella who does he's in like the Hellboy movies and like
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't remember his name. I'll think of it later, but yeah, he's definitely like one of those. But
pretty cool.
That's what I said. I thought it was pretty cool. But anywho. But yeah, the monsters 100%. That was probably the most redeeming thing about this movie. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just that you can't rely 100% on the design of a monster or a creature to like save your movie. Cause that'll only get you so far. You know what I mean? The actors were perfectly fine. They were good with what they were given. But my biggest qualm with this movie, my biggest con to this movie is the fact that it was PG-13. And the reason I say that is because I think that had it been PG-13, had it not been PG-13, I think, is what I meant to say.
There you go.
Had it not been, I feel like they could have definitely gone to greater lengths with the deaths that they did. Because one of the things that you oftentimes get with PG-13 movies is that they do have to kind of skirt around the actual killing. They have to skirt around on-screen violence. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, you know. Implied violence is sometimes worse than actually on-screen violence. But there's also times where on-screen violence is better than implied. And I think with the monsters and the nature of a lot of the kills, I think that having somebody on screen and like showing like a body sawed in half would have been like shocking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like that part of it, giving it the shock factor, would have definitely made the movie better.
Yeah. I mean, when you have this many deaths, right?
Right.
Each one, right, is building to, you know, these major deaths, right? These distinct deaths with these different characters. Yeah. You can't imply them all, right? You know, there could be one or two that's, you know, with some applied or whatever else building, but yeah, you know, you do need at some point, yeah, one or two to pay off a little bit and, it'll build towards something. But, yeah, I agree, but I'm also pretty much in the camp of, you know, some blood and gore in there. Always puts a little frosting on that cake and makes it a little better.
And that's what kind of I was thinking too, is that, for me, like, blood and gore is not, so this is just my opinion. Blood and gore is kind of a prerequisite for like a good horror movie. And I know that that's not the case for a lot of people. And I know that that's probably even like, that's probably a hot take in of itself. But I feel like for like a legitimately good horror film that really takes it the full nine, blood and gore is just par for the course. Now, my wife is the opposite. She doesn't think that a horror movie needs to have blood and gore, right? But even she thought that this movie needed some more. You know what I mean? So the fact that she
was this
kind
was the
of
type of
side,
movie that yeah this is the type of movie that needed it, right? This is not a suspenseful paranormal ish whatever you want to call it, right? This is not like a possession movie or anything like that where it's not as big a deal. This is like slasher light here. This is you needed a little bit of it in this type of film because they were clearly violent deaths. I mean the one she was hammered and impaled or whatever by an attic ladder, and it's like, you know, so you needed to see a little bit of that to get a little payout for that, because just the thought of it was a little, you know, it's like a little cringy, but it's like to see just some of it, a little bit of it, just a little peek at it would have been like, ooh, to really hammer home how gruesome that was.
Exactly. And that's kind of what I was thinking too, is that, you know, the reason movies like Insidious, because all of the Insidious movies, to my knowledge, are rated PG-13. The reason that the Insidious movies are so successful and do as well as they do while being PG-13 is because those movies don't require blood and gore. They get across terror and fright in different ways. They get across that terror and fright by subversion of thought. They think, you know, it's a little more intellectual, and I'm sure that me saying Insidious is an intellectual is probably making someone vomit right now, but it is. To me, it is. And I just feel like with Tarot...
And this movie clearly wasn't.
No. This movie was the furthest from that, and that's not a bad thing. Like, not all horror movies have to be intellectual, but if you're not going to go that route, if you're not going to go the more, you know, I want to say... thought out route, if you don't want to go that route, you kind of need to rely on some of the good old fashioned, like, you know, gore effects and things like that. And I feel like that's why Terrifier succeeds the way it does, because it leans heavily one way, whereas movies like Insidious lean heavily the other way. This movie tried to ride this fine line, and it just didn't work. That's my major qualm. The movie was generally good. It, like you said, it kind of felt like just a good old fashioned, like, quick and easy 90s, 2000s horror movie. The only difference is that this one was rated PG-13, and I get why studios do PG-13 horror movies, because they want to make more money, and PG-13 is going to have a broader audience, because literally anybody can watch a PG-13 horror movie with some mild exceptions. And so I get why they did it. It's just, To me, making a decision about whether or not a movie should be PG-13 or rated R on how much of a buyout it's going to have is never a good idea, just because I'm not personally thinking about whether or not the movie's going to make money. I mean, I want the movie to make money so they make more, but at the same time, I'm not super concerned to it where I'd rather sacrifice, you know, quality over money, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, it is. The biggest issue with it is this seems like it's becoming the standard, right? It's like, let's toe this line, get this rating to try to have as much appeal or whatever, as much potential audience as possible. And, but if you look at the movies who are really jumping and really standing out and really overachieving are the ones that aren't doing that, right? We mentioned the Terrifier movies, right? Let's be frank. Everybody knows how much I love Terrifier 2. We've said, how many times have we said on here? All the time.
Absolutely.
at its core, is Terrifier 2 story driven? Not really.
No.
Right? It's not, I mean, it's, I'm not saying it's horrific, but there's not like this really over the top, mind blowing story at its core that is driving this movie, right? You're watching that movie to see our stuff some mashed potatoes in a bashed in head. And that's the part, right? It's that shock that in that, okay, you know what? We're going to take the gloves off and we're going to do an old fashioned over the top slasher that's really just going to up the ante back up. And that's why it overachieved what it was supposed to and what in all rights it should have, because people are starved for something, some of that. And, because, you know, we love horror, right? There's tons of horror out there for us to see, but it's when you go and you watch, you know, and they're all like Tarot and Night Swim and this and that. It's like, yeah, okay. It's okay. But it's like, yeah, I'm going to take a shower, but it's like lukewarm. And it's like, I really need some heat here to really get that deep scrub. It's not hitting all the way through. It's not, you know, it's like you're not committing. And I'm not saying all of it, right? There is a place for some of this, but there's just here lately, it's like, this is the norm almost. They're all trying to do this now, it seems like. And
to kind of add to that, I feel like it's kind of one of those, like, it just feels like a money ploy. I mean, it's one thing to make a movie PG-13 simply because the film did not require some of the things that might make it like a rated R movie. Like, if a movie doesn't say the F word every 5 seconds, obviously I'm fine with that. Like, I'm not like a huge, like, oh yeah, you have to say, you know, fuck every 5 seconds for the movie to be good. Like, no, I don't care about that. So if a movie is rated PG-13 because it didn't use the F word, that's fine. I'm not going to be upset about that. But if it's PG-13 because they specifically want to kind of circumvent the traditional, you know, show somebody dying because it's going to get them a R rating, that to me is where you kind of draw the line of you're sacrificing that quality. But like you said, it feels like a lot of people are doing that now, and you used a great one, Night Swim, which Night Swim was mediocre to me. It was just all right, you know? Mm-hmm. And I felt like that movie too could have benefited from some better writing, but also maybe having a little more stake or a little more ferocity or just something to give it a little more, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and again, I think a lot of this is also, I think some of it is a result of it's just the way society is right now with this stuff, because there's so much choice and variety now.
Yeah.
And while, you know, on lots of cases, that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. But what it is, right, you have so much out there, so much variety, so many streaming services, so many, you know, movies, so many, whatever. So much, and there's still only so much money that the consumers have, and not everybody can just go get and watch and do everything. So everybody that's producing something is fighting in this massive ocean for what is still a relatively not proportionally grown, money pool, right? It's not our choices and Variety has grown, but not exponentially the, you know, the amount of money available out there to spend is not grown as, you know, as greatly. And, so I think that's kind of why they walk line, because they're trying to, they don't want to turn off anybody as a potential, because every dollar is so, so precious to these guys now. And, you know, and like we talked about earlier, you know, with the Friday the 13th, turned them out almost a year. And every damn one of them made a ton of money. And some of them, let's be frank, some of them aren't the greatest, right? And then, and whatever else. But, you know, hey, if you put a movie out there with Jason or with Freddy or with Michael Myers, shit was going to make money. And it's, there's that, it's not that guarantee anymore. Because, you know, there's just so much out there.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, I mean, there's, I mean, I love variety, right? I love choice. I love selection. I love that there's so much out there. I love that there's so much opportunity for independent filmmakers and upcoming filmmakers to get their product out there. But there is a point where sometimes you get a little oversaturated for the consumer.
Yeah.
And they have to make a selection. And, so, you know, that's what happens. And, they try to not make sure they don't, you know, turn away any of the consumers as a potential, because they want that dollar. So.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it. Honestly, the oversaturation of the market is starting to turn on its head a little bit, because there's this fine equilibrium where the number of films that are being pumped into the market versus the fans' desire, it reaches a fine line where the movies are still good quality, but that little, I guess you could say, that lever starts to turn just a little bit, where it starts dipping into the lower quality stuff, because they're like, we want to try and produce as many movies as possible try and give them their what they want.
Yeah. And I mean, and it's happening across the board with all kinds of stuff, right? I mean, it's,
yeah.
I mean, I have virtually every streaming service imaginable, and hundreds of movies that I've, you know, digitally purchased and everything else. And there's so much variety, and it's when push come to shove, I feel like, I don't know, so much of the time, I end up rewatching something I've watched a million times already, because that's my favorite. My coming out, you know, there's obviously new stuff I do watch, and clearly and everything else, but it's, I don't know. Sometimes there's so much out there. It's just like, I get to a point where I'm like, just screw it. I'm just going to put back on something I know I'm going to watch, want to watch, because I'm tired of jumping from streaming services and you know, and again, I don't know what the solution is, because I don't want to see us go back to just having three network channels and that's it. And two movies showed at the theater each week. But I think, you know, there has to be a balance. Maybe, you know, maybe some, you know, condensing of streaming services, you know, into, you know, I've always said that, I don't know, I feel like the best route to go with streaming is very similar to like the cable satellite type service, but where it's, you're paying so much a month or whatever, but you're not getting a predetermined package of channels, but you get to pick so many a la carte for your money and pick what you want. And, you know, something like, I don't know that there is a solution.
Yeah. Cause the solution and is unfortunately, either we stop making movies and the quality starts to improve that equilibrium, or we just kind of let them do what they're doing.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, my fear is, and again, who knows? It's just a hypothetical. So, you know, my fear is that at some point the solution and where it goes is just a, you know, a bit of a crash and coming back down to earth of the genre, that suddenly, you know, we've had so much horror movies out there, and some of them have really, really achieved. And then it's going to get to a point where if it is oversaturated and someone can only go to one movie a week and there's three horror movies out there, they're going to have to pick one. So there's, you know, these three horror movies are splitting splitting the horror consumers. And so they're not, none of them are really achieving that high end. And I guess the point where studios saying, oh, well, maybe horror is not the big money maker it was. It moves on to something else, you know, and we don't get as much. So I don't know. Again, who knows? Who knows? I mean, and maybe it'll never happen, right? Maybe just the standards of the studios is, and companies is, maybe it's just lower now, right? Maybe they don't expect these super blockbusters anymore, and what they're expecting of them is much lower, and they're content with you know, maybe the numbers on their end of what their expectations are have come down. That they, and again, some of it, I understand their model also is it's not just theater driven anymore either. That's why things go to video on demand quicker and to service, you know, they factor that in as potential, you know, input or income. So, you know, so maybe the model has evolved for them enough that it's okay and it can sustain. And then when you have services like specialty services like Shudder and Screambox that can help with, you know, some of the more independent stuff and non-major, you know, helping support that in, maybe everything will stay afloat and be fine. But to bring it around to the initial point, whatever happens, I wish we could break out of this. Everything's got to be PG-13 red.
Yeah.
That, you know, we understand, yes, there is a place for that. Yes. But, you know, sometimes, hey, break out PG-13, and if it doesn't go to a theater, so be it. Send it to a network stream, you know, or something, or just send it to a theater and let it do what it's going to do and then go to video on demand or whatever. I mean, I don't know. I understand it's hard and I understand you're dealing with financial backers and everybody else, but I want some of these filmmakers to get their balls back and really just say, you know what? This is my vision and my vision says it has to have this and it has to have this rating. And again, yes, there's a place for PG-13. Not all of it, right? Not all of it. Horror is not made for across the board to be PG-13. It's got to have some more. But
got to have some more. That's right. That's the best way to put it. It's got to have some more.
So, and, you know, I think it's part of the reason. One of the reasons, at least, I anticipate like Terrifier 3 so much that I know that ain't gonna be PG-13. So I mean, it's like, you know.
Yeah, it's probably not going to be. I'm just going to guess.
I think that's, you know, Vegas money says nope. I don't even think Vegas would take that bet.
No, I don't think so. I'm going to say that they're probably thinking, yeah, it's a bet I'm about to fucking lose.
All right. Well, then, let's rate this sucker. Excuse me. Again, it was an okay movie, not my cup of tea. I think, like we've discussed, there's some things that was missing. You know, again, it was predictable, which is not always a strike. But I think when you're not really, like we've talked, not wholly committed to any other aspect, the predictability just is kind of bleh. So I think on this one, I think I'm going to give it a 2.5 out of 5. I think it's just it didn't really pick a lane to commit to. It kind of even brings it down a notch below that baseline 3 for us. So I'm giving it a 2.5 out of 5 screams. Ike, what are you rating it?
Oh, Lord. I think for me, I'm just going to have to give it a run-of-the-mill standard 3. And the only reason I'm not dipping below 3 is because I was still able to enjoy the movie. It left me wanting more. It left me wanting something else to happen. And like you said, it was very predictable. I mean, I pretty much knew what was happening. I guessed, you know, a lot of the twists that were going to happen. So yeah, standard 3, bada bang, bada boom, forget about it.
Yep. Absolutely. So, I don't know. I don't think signs are indicating we'll get a tarot too, but
probably not.
weirder things have happened. Never know. But, anyway, so, next week, like we mentioned earlier, we are going to be reviewing Life of Bill, which is coming to Screambox on May 17th. So check that out after you listen to our, what will be spoiler free review since it will drop prior to the movie releasing on Screambox. So Ike, before we say goodbye and get out of here, anything you want to throw in?
The guy I was trying to think about earlier was Doug Jones.
the other guy who kind of does like all the creature stuff.
Who is it again?
Doug Jones.
Oh yeah, Doug Jones. Okay, yeah, gotcha.
He's right. Yeah. He's a Ball State alumni too.
There you go.
Chirp chirp for my Ball State people out there.
There you go. All right. Well, you know, people are like, "What? What are you talking about?"
They're probably like, "What the fuck is this guy talking about? What do you mean, chirp chirp? What's that supposed to mean?
Why are you chirping balls? What's that mean? I don't understand any of this."
Hey, don't worry about it. Worry
there
about
you
it.
Go. Well, now, if you want to understand, just go get your astrological sign read by a tarot card master and see what happens. Just don't use weird cards in a weird box. Don't use somebody else's deck. I think that was the gist of it. You should just stick to your own deck and stay in your own lane, and it's all cool. And
through that.
And if you get the death card, remember, it's not always a bad thing. Sometimes that means a new beginning.
That's right. Could just mean the beginning of something new.
Yeah, but sometimes for that new, you got to kill the old. So, oh well. Who knows? But hopefully not. Hopefully all goes well for you. And until next week, in our next episode, reviewing Life of Bill. Wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and have many pleasant nightmares.